episode Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 14, 2021. More than 15 people were killed during intercommunal violence in Lake State.
Saturday, at around 10, the fighting erupted between two main sections of Gonj and Thich. During the fight, more than 17 persons was killed.
And international aid agencies reach families cut off by fighting in Sudan's southern Kordofan and Blue Nile areas.
This was the first assistance that people in these isolated areas had received from the United Nations in the last decade.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eighteen people were killed and more than 20 others wounded during intercommunal fighting in Lake State over the weekend. The police spokesperson in Lake State says the fighting took place in two cattle camps during a dispute over grazing land. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Lake State police spokesperson Captain Elijah Mabor Makwai says tensions started building between young men from the Gonj and Thuich communities of Rumbekis County on Friday before violence erupted on Saturday.
Saturday, at around 10, the fighting erupted between two main sections of Gonj and Thich. During the fight, more than 17 persons was killed and other more 22 persons injured.
Makwai says the fighting occurred in Alao and Manyang rail cattle camps, two contested grazing areas between the communities. Makwai says before fighting erupted, police were deployed along the roads and some payam to protect vulnerable villagers and travelers from being attacked or looted.
The police intervened before the youths confronted each other, and they opted to take control on highway roads and the towns along the road, such that they can provide security protection to the vulnerable group, elderly people, women, children.
Makwai says authorities switched off the mobile phone network operating in Rumbekis County to prevent armed men in both communities from mobilizing their colleagues to join the fighting. He says police have noticed that armed young men in Lake State often use mobile device to ask their friends to join intercommunal clashes. Makwai says the two communities repeatedly fought over the two disputed areas of grazing land. He says the police are unable to solve conflict and urge national government officials to intervene and solve the dispute.
Our role as a police, we only deal with the security report when things are out of our hands like this one, because this type of conflicts is out of control of the police. It's not the capacity of the police, because even the armed youth are more armed than the organized forces themselves. So we provide the reports, security report, to the authorities, and then authorities will decide on it.
Reverend Father Benjamin Madolakot, a priest in the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek, condemned the violence and also called on the national government to pay close attention to the armed youth in Lake State before the violence gets out of hand.
These youths fighting each other have lost value in the society. They are no longer behaving like our sons. They are wild and they don't listen to anyone, even their parents. They have grown disrespectfully in the society. I don't see what they are fighting for. The land is very vast for the animals to graze.
Meanwhile, police in Lake State say they are preparing to receive a newly appointed governor, Honorable Rinpeng Mabor, in the coming week. Makwai says a security committee will brief the governor of one arrival about the ongoing communal issues in Lake State. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor, reporting in Rumbek, Lake State.
United Nations agencies are praising the transitional government in Sudan and the Rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu for allowing aid workers to access five areas in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states for the first time in 10 years. UN officials say humanitarian access to SPLM-controlled areas will provide urgent assistance to an estimated 800,000 people who need relief following years of isolation. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
The World Food Programme, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, the UN Refugee Agencies, and the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs all took part in a 6-week mission to Zoska and Amora in Blue Nile State and Kao or Nyaro, Rashad, which is also known as New Tegali, and Western Jebel in South Kordofan State. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Lenny Kensley, the head of communications and public relations for the World Food Programme in Sudan, said these five areas have largely been cut off from support over the last 10 years. Kensley says the mission's findings indicate that people are in dire need of improved food security, education, health, and water and sanitation services. She says WFP has delivered 100 metric tons of nutritious biscuits for 25,000 school children in 83 schools over five recent missions to the area.
This was the first assistance that people in these isolated areas had received from the United Nations in the last decade due to conflict and access constraints. A lack of food for students is one of the main challenges in maintaining school enrollment in these isolated areas. Providing school meals is among the top priorities for WFP's response as access continues to open.
Kinsley says an estimated 800,000 people in these areas are in desperate need of relief. She says expanding access to SPLM North control enclaves is crucial to providing urgent assistance to the affected communities.
Ramping up support will help stabilize communities and pave the path for peace-building efforts while reinforcing the UN's commitment to assist marginalized populations in Sudan.
Eddie Rao, the country director for the United Nations World Food Programme in Sudan, describes the move as a huge breakthrough. He says gaining humanitarian access to these communities will improve thousands of lives and rebuild livelihoods.
Communities in these areas have been struggling and surviving on little or nothing for a decade. So access for humanitarian agencies to increase their assistance to these vulnerable communities is critical. With improved food security and other opportunities, families will be able to reintegrate with the rest of Sudan and start to recover and rebuild.
Abdullah Fadil, the UNICEF country director in Sudan, describes the missions as a major development, saying political leaders in the area must ensure that humanitarian access to children and communities in need is always granted. Fadil says the mission's preliminary findings found that children in the five areas have been entirely left behind, and there is an urgent need to act now to ensure that, in his word, these children have a future.
Consistent access and allowing us to deliver needed services wherever it's feasible, wherever it's possible and makes the most logistic sense would really make a difference in the lives of these communities. We hope this will continue and we hope that no children will be left behind just because of where they are located.
The humanitarian community in Sudan is calling for increased access and critically needed assistance to support these marginalized communities. They commended the transitional government and leaders of the SPLM North faction led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu for being engaged at peace talks in Juba, South Sudan, which humanitarians say should put an end to the suffering of many communities in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit. In Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move back to Juba, where the president of the African Export and Import Bank is calling on South Sudan's leaders to build democratic institutions and ensure good governance to attract international investors. Benedict Omra, who paid a two-day visit to South Sudan over the weekend, made the remarks following meetings with President Salva Kiir and other top government officials. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
In speaking at a dinner ceremony attended by government officials and business owners over the weekend, Professor Benedict Orama, president of the African Export and Import, or AfriExim Bank, headquartered in Cairo, noted that South Sudan is a new country with a lot of potential, but its government has a role to play in order to attract foreign investment.
Two indispensable preconditions for the return of international investments and inclusive economic development here in South Sudan. Sociopolitical stability is essential if the country is to attract private capital and investments required to build, transform and diversify South Sudan's economy.
Orama also called on the government of South Sudan to build a conducive environment that promotes private sector growth, which he says could be the engine for economic transformation in the country. Yoa Soso, representative of the South Sudan Chamber of Commerce, says the country's business industry and private sector face enormous challenges, and infrastructure is the biggest one.
Infrastructure has been the backbone of our problems in this country. I import things, I explore, I go to India, I go to China, I go to Malaysia, go everywhere I want to bring cargo to South Sudan. Do you know what is the most expensive thing? Transport. Transport at a time can cost even more than the price of the goods itself. As a country, we need to invest on corridors. We are a landlord country. We don't have ports. Currently, we have the only one road, which is called Numuli Road, which is a bay road, but now it's also dying.
Soso says building several roads that will connect South Sudan to neighboring countries such as Ethiopia and Kenya could ease the high cost of transportation of goods. He says without such connectivity, nothing will be achieved. Orama revealed that the government of South Sudan has introduced a multi-billion dollar infrastructure development proposal.
Today, we began discussions on how AfriExim Bank can support the government's ambitions towards a $3 billion infrastructure development. We like ambitious programs, and we commend the government for not being timid. If you are timid, you remain underdeveloped. You have to set your goals high, and I can assure you that we will work with the government using all our resources and capabilities to make sure that these aspirations are realized.
The Nigerian-born AfriExim Bank president encouraged South Sudanese business owners and private institutions not to shy away from seeking financial support from the African Export and Import Bank.
If you know that you are trustworthy, if you know that you are reliable, if you know that you can formulate a good business, if you know that if we work with you and trust you, that you will not betray our trust, because trust is like life. You lose it once. Please don't be worried, even if you think your ideas are blandish. We have a saying in the bank that if it is possible, it will be done.
South Sudan became a member of the AfriExim Bank a little over 3 years ago. Orama says the bank has financed projects totaling up to $1 billion that include the expansion of Juba International Airport and an oil refinery project. In the past, South Sudan has borrowed an amount totaling $88 million from the AfriExim Bank on a pandemic trade impact mitigation scheme. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Zimbabwean government locks down the country due to fears of a third wave of COVID-19. That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today. When you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Zimbabwe has announced new preventive measures to guard against the spread of COVID-19 in what the government fears may be the beginning of a third wave. Reporter Josiah Zenvashi has details from Harare.
Announcing the reintroduction of the lockdown Saturday night on national television, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga said complacency had resulted in a recent spike in cases of the coronavirus responsible for the COVID-19 disease.
In addition, our vaccination against COVID-19 is going on very well. The country is, however, experiencing a surge in cases. The last 7 days have seen 596 new cases and 26 deaths as compared to the same period in May last year, where we had 132 new cases and 6 deaths.
Chiwenga, who doubles as Zimbabwe's health minister, said all gatherings except for funerals would be banned come Monday. Only 30 people would be allowed at funerals. He did not indicate when the new measures would be reviewed. Itairu Sike, head of non-profit community working group on health in Zimbabwe, commended the government for tightening the lockdown to avoid a pending third wave disaster.
Yes, this may look a bit draconian, but the measures are still necessary if we are to save lives. So it is important that the people of Zimbabwe should embrace these measures. It is also important for those Zimbabweans that are eligible to be vaccinated to come forward and willingly, you know, get vaccinated if the country is to move towards, you know, achieving the herd immunity of vaccinating at least 60% of the population, which translates to about 10 million Zimbabweans.
Zimbabwe's vaccination effort against the infection has recently been hit by shortages of the shots. But officials say the country still has stocks of the 1.7 million vaccines it has received from China, Russia, and India since February. Last week, Zimbabwe received 25,000 Sputnik doses from Russia. That was a few days after it rejected Johnson & Johnson vaccines from the African Union, financed by the African Export-Import Bank. Zimbabwe has 39,852 confirmed coronavirus infections and 1,632 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the global outbreak.
Still on COVID, concerns over the safety of the COVID-19 vaccine are common, especially when it comes to inoculating very young children. A new study suggests that some mothers may be passing along antibodies to their infants. VOA's Degi Dimochini has more.
Then Iti, my hobo.
Toro is 6 months old. His mother, Nagihan Dede, was visiting her family in Turkey when she found out she was pregnant with her son. Then the coronavirus pandemic broke out and she was stranded in Istanbul for months.
We never got out. I just went to see my doctors because we didn't know what the disease was.
She returned to the U.S. and in October, 5 months after returning from Turkey, Dora was born. Within weeks, the U.S. began its vaccine campaign and Dede, who was breastfeeding, began looking into whether the vaccines were safe for her and her child.
I consulted my doctor and my doctor told me that I also passed the vaccine benefits to my child through breastfeeding and that it was protecting him as well.
A joint study by Harvard University and Massachusetts General Hospital suggests mothers are passing on COVID-19 antibodies to their babies. The study included 131 women, 84 of them pregnant, 31 breastfeeding, and 16 neither pregnant nor breastfeeding. The research found that vaccine antibodies passed on to the babies before and after birth through the umbilical cord or breast milk.
Individuals that have been vaccinated and they are breastfeeding, they provide a more robust immune protective response to the infant versus if you've been naturally infected with COVID-19.
Dr. Sira Madad is an infectious diseases expert featured on a Netflix documentary called Pandemic, How to Prevent an Outbreak. She is also a breastfeeding mother.
While I was breastfeeding my now one-year-old, I actually decided months ago that I would pump and give the breast milk to my 5 and 7 year old in their milk just to pass on those antibodies and that protective benefits.
Some parents worry that the breast milk of a vaccinated mother can be harmful to the baby. But according to the CDC, these vaccines are not believed to be a risk to lactating people or their breastfeeding babies. And the U.S. Health Agency says reports show antibodies in the breast milk may help protect babies, although more data is needed to determine what protections these antibodies may provide.
So you're not going to find the virus in the breast milk. You're going to find the antibodies, the protective antibodies instead. And so it's important just to understand how the mechanism and the biological plausibility of, you know, any dangerous pose, and there is no dangerous pose in that regard. And that
doctors hope this is good news for mothers like Nagihan Dede, who want to ensure they and their children are protected from the virus. Dilge Timoçin, VOA News, Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Still on issues to do with children, United Nations agencies are warning that thousands of children in northern Ethiopia's Tigray province risk dying from starvation and malnutrition-related illnesses because aid agencies cannot reach the region with humanitarian aid. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Conflict-ridden Tigray remains off-limits to United Nations and private aid agencies, despite Ethiopian government promises they would have unfettered access to the region. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says the region is on the brink of famine, adding that without immediate massive assistance, Tigray will face a crisis not seen in a decade.
We are seeing more and more young children and babies slide dangerously close to sickness and potential death from malnutrition. So we've rung alarm bells, and here we are now. We now have, you know, the largest number of people classified as food insecure in a decade since Somalia. And as I say, that very real risks the deaths of tens of thousands of children.
An estimated 250,000 people died in the devastating 2010-2011 Somali famine, more than half of them children under the age of five. The United Nations says more than 350,000 people in Tigray are on the verge of famine. It warns an estimated 33,000 severely malnourished children in inaccessible areas are at high risk of death. The World Health Organization reports its teams and mobile health clinics are ready to go into Tigray and administer care, but have been turned away by the warring parties. WHO spokeswoman Margaret Harris says access to the region is key to tackling what she calls a public health emergency.
Malnourished children are more likely to contract any of the infectious diseases and die of it, such as pneumonia, diarrhea, malaria and measles. Malaria and malnutrition is a lethal combination. So we're over 350 severe acute malnutrition cases among children under 5 years of age last week only. That was just last week, 18 of them with complications.
Harris says WHO is kicking off a cholera vaccination campaign Saturday as the disease thrives during the rainy season, which begins this month. She says 4,000 people will be inoculated as a preventive measure, as Tigray is known as a place with outbreaks in the past. However, she adds, the campaign's success requires safe access by health workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with the song Maengo Choma by Kledi Muzika.
Sani kangu bani mama, maiki langu chuma. Sani kangu bani mama, maiki langu chuma. Sani kangu bani baba, maiki langu chuma. Sani kangu bani baba, maiki langu chuma. Yamo tamunu mako, maiki langu chuma. Yamo tamunu mako, maiki langu chuma.
Listening to Kledi Muzika and the song Maengo Choma. I'm John Tanza and thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
tiny bag.